Morning, Rach. Morning, Hugh.
Good morning.
How are you? Not so bad. I'm not sure of the smartness of saying morning on a podcast that someone could listen to in the evening.
But we'll see. It gives it authenticity.
It does, yes. Like we've planned a time to do this and we are off. So we'll keep this short. Shall we get on with it?
Let's do it.
You're listening to the Real Reading Podcast.
I'm Hugh Fort.
I'm Rachel Nemeth.
And I'm Tom Canning, and welcome to episode 104 of the Real Reading Podcast. Like us on Twitter at Real Reading Pod and search Real Reading Podcast Group on Facebook to find us. We have got a view of some of the week's headlines, including car park threatening potatoes, which, you know, Hugh's got some things to tell us about on that one.
I feel like I'm going to have a lot of questions about that.
a one-way system in Caversham that's left one of our panels scratching her head. And we try and understand why Reading keeps being voted a great city when it's not. We're also joined today by guest presenter Becky Stevens. Hello, Becky.
Hi.
You are part of Reading's urban indie market. Are you one of the founders? Is that fair?
I am the founder. Yes.
The founder. Okay. So you're part of that. That's one of the things that you do. And you are also a former Reading Evening Post employee, like us.
I am. That was a lifetime ago.
It feels like it, doesn't it? A long, long time ago, sat in that building on Tessa Road.
Those are dreams
in
that
tiny little IT room with me.
Yes, to give you your full title, which is Becky from IT.
Have you only just found out that's not her surname, Hugh?
Yeah, jobs included, changing the toner on the printer.
She was the one that kept us all in shape and organised.
Very true. So it was an important job. It was an important job.
What, like Jen from the IT crowd? That was me. But actually know anything about IT at all.
But you knew how to direct the people who do know.
Exactly.
So this week's big interview is with Ashley Pearce. Ashley is the councillor for Church Ward in Reading, and he is the lead councillor for education, which is timely with schools about to head back and all the head-scratching questions that come with it. So we will be talking to Ashley a little later on, so stay tuned for that. In the meantime, Becky, I don't know if you listened to last week's podcast. It wasn't a prerequisite to coming on and being a guest presenter with us, but we had a story about the Loop the Loop man, or woman, because people were keen to point out that it could also be a woman, and that was something we did point out on the podcast. But generally, the name that was on social media when this story went around was the Loop the Loop man. But you know, Loop the Loop person just doesn't quite have the.
But I am aware of a Loop the Loop person.
so we did have some feedback. This is one of the we don't get a lot of feedback, and that is either because you know, people are just quite happy listening along and whatever, or we don't really ask, you know, too many big questions. But the Loop the Loop man certainly has raised some feedback, and actually we've had an email, which is unusual. We've had an email, and we shall call her, I think, Detective Alice. So, shall I read the email to you guys?
Okay, go on. Is she going to solve the mystery for us?
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Hugh, just so you know, nodding yes is not quite good enough on an audio medium.
No, but I would also argue, Tom, that saying, shall I read the email, giving us a choice to say no, would also not make great audio either. So.
Fair. Okay, right. Hi, Tom, Rachel and Hugh. How are you getting on with solving the mystery? Short answer, we're not. From the angle they mostly fly off after a session, I'm guessing they're from West London Aero Club, WLAC, flying from White Waltham, which I think was where we were thinking it probably came from. She says, Detective Alice says, it's not just Sundays, they appear on any sunny day, so they must have a lot of free time, and whoever they are appear in many different coloured planes. So they must be very rich, or maybe it's professionals giving lessons or just fun experience flights. The aerobatics have been going on for many years, guessing at least 10, maybe 20. Where are they from, and why do they fly over Tilehurst and Thiel? Maybe there's a rota for aerobatic pilot practice, and our area has the set time slot every morning and afternoon, and other areas have different times. Maybe this happens all over Berkshire. Where can I join in on the discussions? It's a total mystery, and I want to help solve it. Detective Alice. And I point out that I have coined Detective Alice. Alice is her real name, but she may or may not be a real-life detective. I don't know. However, she has also sent a map that says, who are they and where do they fly from? It's got two little nice graphics on it, and she's pointed all of the airfields around Reading. So there's a heliport at Ascot Racecourse, Fair Oaks Airport, Farnborough, Blackbush. Blackbush we weren't sure about, but that is definitely there. White Waltham Airfield, Chiltern, Furze Farm, Basingstoke, Popham, Lasham, Bourne Park and Charles Church. So plenty of opportunity there. Hugh, I know in response to the sort of the set time slot and where they can fly, you did some research into this during the week, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I found out, a document that I'm just going to read from.
Okay.
Stop noise over Whitchurch. So there's a snow, possibly named after the 1990s rapper. The group is investigating what steps can be taken to reduce or eradicate the noise nuisance to Whitchurch on Thames residents caused by light aircraft doing aerobatics over the village. And it's only snow is only concerned with Whitchurch on Thames and only with aerobatic aircraft. And this is the progress report on August the 19th. So it's very new.
Right.
It's not an old document. And they say it's White Waltham Airfield as well.
Okay.
Certain populated areas, for example, Reading, are marked as no-go areas for aerobatics. Whitchurch on Thames and Pangbourne are not marked as no-go areas. They're working with White Waltham Airfield to try to address and settle noise complaints as far as is reasonably practical. Aerobatics are typically done at 3,000 feet. And they have, there's a phone number, which I'm not going to read out. So there's an action group trying to look into this as well. So, from what the detective says, Tom, it sounds like there might be quite a few different pilots.
Yes, it does sound like. We've also had a tweet. The social media reaction was mostly people annoyed by the noise, and there were a few people who said they love it. But one of the tweets we got was from Adrian Lawson, who said, "The loop man?" Question mark. There are several planes that come to the area, mostly from White Waltham, as it is a designated area, and some of them are piloted by women. I do reiterate, we did point out that it could be a woman in last week's podcast, and all of them are a noise nuisance, which I don't know. One way or the other, but yes, so the story rumbles on, but we think it's White Waltham. I do think from the social media reaction it's going to be very difficult for us to actually speak to any of them, and if any of them would want to come forward and talk to us,
they might have to have their voice changed.
Yes,
and be silhouetted and,
yes,
and
also, all yes, sit in the dark. All right, well, let's move on. If you have anything more about the loop person, if you would like to further what the good detective has told us, then here's Jeremy with how you can get in touch.
Get in touch with the team. Email hello@realreadingpodcast.co.uk. Find us on Twitter and Instagram @realreadingpod, and join our Facebook group by searching Real Reading Podcast.
Thank you, Jeremy. This week, is it this week, Rach? It should be Reading Festival.
Well, it's bank holiday weekend, yes. Isn't it? Yeah, so it's Wednesday today. We're recording on Wednesday, so people should be starting to arrive.
Yes.
And obviously they're not.
It's very sad. Now, Becky, you strike me, and if I remember rightly, you were a big Reading Festival goer, have I got that right?
They were my people, yes.
Now, we all worked in the Tessa Road Reading Evening Post Office back in the day, and it was one of the great moments of the year when they were always labelled the great unwashed on social media or in the old Get Reading comments box. But I never had a problem with them. I thought it was brilliant that all these people came to town, and it was always such a good vibe. Would you agree, Becky?
Absolutely. I think when we used to watch them from the office, I was probably, maybe 22, and they were still very much, my people. but if I was still in the office and watching them arrive, I would be very jealous because I wasn't there with them. I think it was a lot of fun. I think the only time it was a problem when maybe, they used the wall outside the office as a toilet or something like that. I don't think that was day one. I think that was maybe a little bit further down the weekend.
I think one of my favourite things was always sort of seeing these kids show up and get dropped off outside our building with, like, they'd be wearing sort of really stylish clothing. These are young kids being dropped off by their parents in these sort of big cars, and they'd have nice rucksacks or nice suitcases and stuff, and you're thinking, it's going to rain, I've seen the forecast. Why are you? Even if it wasn't, I can't imagine it, anything came back in a mint condition.
They always did get dropped off by their parents outside our building, didn't they? And I just remember thinking that this is sound awful, but particularly the girls would be getting out and thinking that they all looked really, like, quirky and unique, and look at me, I'm really cool on my way to the festival. But because we saw them all, they all looked the same.
Yes.
Just with varying degrees of perhaps colour in their hair and stuff, but they all had their wellies, their denim hot pants, like you said, their very expensive rucksacks that are going to get absolutely trashed within about 2 minutes and probably left there. To be honest,
it was always quite a bustling, busy space, wasn't it?
I think it was a taxi rank outside. Yes. That's right,
it was
always very busy.
You see the taxis, you'd see the taxis turn up, but you'd also see the middle class parents drop them off in their Range Rovers, and as they walked away, just get sort of shouting after them, giving them last minute advice, don't take any drugs, or as these worried parents send their 15-year-olds off for 3 days at the festival.
I think a few years, didn't we give out little packs on the forecourt at the front to people?
Yes.
I remember standing out there giving. It probably had absolutely useless.
I remember
unless it had
some
a can of beer and some baby wipes. I can't imagine they would be interested.
I remember some of the things that used to go, because I used to help make up the packs at times. So these packs we were giving away, basically anything that was left in the promotions department would just go into these bags. And I remember one year there were these weird sweets that apparently had some sort of sort of effect on your digestive system somewhat.
That is not what you need.
No.
When you're using portaloos for the weekend.
But also, I also remember just like stuffing condoms into bags as well.
Safety first, Thomas.
Safety first. It was good times, good fun times. Becky, I feel like you're probably the most in tune with the festival scene out of all four of us. What was going to Reading Festival?
I'm the least.
I feel like that's a slight against me and Hugh. We're cool too.
I'm the least. I'm the least.
Cool.
Okay.
I am.
Well, I'll tell you what, Rach. How about I come to you in just a minute after Becky has
regaled us? Yeah, no, I think Becky's probably got it covered, to be fair.
I loved it. I think I started going when I was about 16. And when I think back to that first time, I can't believe my parents let me go, to be honest. I shan't share that on here. I think it still is a lot of fun. I still go. I can't handle it for 3 days. I'm too old. And it's definitely still a massive fashion show. But you see so many really cool bands, and you know, it's rare you're going to get to be in one field seeing just what hundreds of acts, from massive ones, small ones. You can discover kind of new favorites. It's just, it is brilliant. I think festival goers do get a bit of a bad name, but they're just living their best lives.
Did you notice, Becky, over the years that you were going, a shift in the type of music that was played there? And did that absolutely affect how you felt about it?
Yeah, absolutely. If I go now, again, I don't know if it's an age thing. If I go now, I barely recognise any of the acts on the lineup. but I think there has been a shift into maybe a kind of, you know, more dancier kind of acts, I want to say, but even just saying that makes me feel old. Yeah, I'm very much a kind of guitar-y indie girl, and while that's still there, there's just not as much of it as maybe there used to be. And obviously the metal stuff, there's less of that as well, I think.
Is that sort of just the changing of the times and the levels of popularity of things? Would a festival that was all, would Reading Festival full of metal music or full of sort of indie rock music, would that bring the crowds like it does? I don't know. Probably not at the moment, but you know, these things have cycles and it'll probably come back around again.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be lying if I said I really knew what the kids are into these days, but they still turn up in their droves, so I think it absolutely suits the people that are going.
Which I guess is fair enough. I think one thing, Rach, that you raise is that actually with the festival not going ahead this year, there's an impact economically, particularly with businesses nearby. You know, my first thought was the Gorge Cafe on the corner. You know, but also, you know, Caversham and I suppose even Tesco on Portman Road is going to be an effect, because they would have probably budgeted for the festival weekend, you would think. There's going to be a lot of cans of hops.
It would have been a huge economic boost weekend for Reading ordinarily. With, I can't remember how many people come in. It's like a couple of 100,000, is it? It's literally millions.
it's like 90,000 a day, isn't it, I think?
Yeah, it's a lot. So to miss out on that economy boost when we're already obviously in a not very good situation with COVID, it's a shame, because I was saying to you guys yesterday, I kind of can remember back, I must have been about 17, I think, when I was at college and I was working in the BHS cafe at the time. I like to call myself a chef, but microwave technician is probably more accurate. And I remember on the festival Saturday morning, I cooked 200 fry-ups for people, which for a 17-year-old, I mean, that it goes on my CV, to be honest. It's an achievement. So we just haven't got that level of...
That sounds pretty daunting. God.
Yes.
I hope you got all the eggs right.
Yeah, eggs are the hardest bit, aren't they? Yeah.
I guess it's just
a bit hard.
I guess it, you know, I don't think we probably don't know what the economic impact is, but it'd be interesting to know kind of what the festival brings in to the economy during that period of time. And certainly, had we put any actual long term planning into this, we possibly could have tried to speak to a couple of the businesses. But maybe that's one for your news list, Hugh. To see sort of what businesses are doing this weekend.
It's already on my news list, Tom. I'm well into the well into it. So
amazing.
In the next couple of days.
Amazing. Excellent. Right. Okay. Well, that was interesting. We will move on and have a little chat about this week's news headlines. Okay, news headlines this week. Now, first up, I think I couldn't go any further when I was looking through the Berkshire Live website this week when I saw a story about Reading Station car park that could collapse because of a small crop of potatoes. Now, Hugh, tell me about this story, because it's ridiculous. This is absolutely classic angry people in local newspaper.
Oh, yeah, this is proper local news. This is where it's at. So I spotted this on the Facebook page of a group called Guerrilla Gardening. So guerrilla.
Yeah.
Like militant movements rather than giant apes. They put a picture up of their potato crop, which is just on a little patch of land by Reading Station car park off Aston Road. You'd know.
Is it where the bench and flowers and things are? As you come over the pedestrian crossing from Thames Water, just there.
Yeah, it is. That's their little gorilla garden.
That's their little bit. Okay.
It is there, yes. And they've been growing, they've been working on that little patch of land for about 5 years. And it's really small. But they've had a run-in with Network Rail, who have written them a letter saying, of raising various concerns about what they're growing, which include potatoes. And the humble spud is certainly causing an issue. And the letter says that the potato crop's roots could grow underneath the car park and cause structural damage, and therefore that they need to be removed. Apparently, there are various other trees around different parts of the car park which are actually causing structural damage to the car park, which are also being worked on, which has nothing to do with guerrilla gardening. But yes, it's potatoes and what they call a pernicious weed, which called when I try and pronounce what this pernicious weed is called, a Buddleia.
Okay.
Apologies to Alan Titchmarsh.
Is that a weed?
That's what Network Rail have labelled it as, perhaps slanderously. I don't know. I'm no expert.
This isn't the first case of gorilla something that I've come across. I remember a few years ago in Dorking, they had some gorilla knitters, and they used to knit. There's a big like sculpture of a cockerel on a roundabout in Dorking, and in Dorking in Surrey, and they used to do a hat and a scarf for this cockerel on the roundabout, and it was especially during the winter, and they were Dorking gorilla knitters or something like that. But I thought that was very strange. So it's the actual spud could bring down the car park is what we're saying, Hugh.
Not quite, no.
Okay.
When I heard the headline, I thought you were going to say like somebody had snuck up and planted a little crop on level 4 or something, and that it was like growing into the wall and causing it to crumble or something. I've never seen a potato plant big enough. Roots that big?
That's what the gardeners say, that everything they're doing is too small to cause any damage, but they're perfectly happy to work with Network Rail on whatever Network Rail is asking for, because they own the land. So it's quite a good, it's not a massive row by any means, it's quite a good natured thing. It's just one party asking the other to make a few changes, really. But there is this structural damage thing, potential structural damage. I think Network Rail is perhaps being a little bit overly cautious with it all, but they have various things they have to keep to, in terms of they're not allowed to grow anything up the side of the car park, for example. Which apparently was already there. They're just sort of, having talks about what can and can't be done there, I think.
Becky, if you were going to do some guerrilla gardening, what would you grow?
Oh, I don't know. Something that attracts bees and stuff, I reckon.
Not wasps.
Yeah, I just googled Buddleia, and that's called the butterfly bush or plant or something.
Yeah, so
that would be a nice one.
I think Buddleias just grow really fast and really huge, which I guess is a problem if you're growing it somewhere like the train station.
It's the pernicious weed label, yeah.
Exactly.
Lovely stuff.
I forgot, Becky's a bit of a plant lady. She loves a plant.
House plant, though. House plant. I'm not great at garden, okay. I have to say, yeah.
Rach, this one's all on you. Caversham one-way system. What is it? I know Hugh's covered it before with the temporary things for COVID, the temporary changes to traffic situations. But the Caversham one-way system has been causing you to scratch your head a little bit this week. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so this came into effect on Monday, I think. So ordinarily, if they were going to be changing use of roads, then there'd be some kind of signage up as an advanced warning that as of this date, this is happening and you won't be able to drive down here anymore. I don't remember seeing any of that, but there were road signs like stop, do not enter, go this way type ones, but they, the permanent ones, but they just had a carrier bag over them. So it was like, well, I assume I don't have to adhere to that because someone's put a bag over it. On Monday, the bags came off, which means that now where Westfield Road, which comes down the side of Westfield Park down towards the Fox and Hounds pub, you can only come southbound down the hill on that. When you get to the bottom, you can now turn left or right, so left towards George Street and along Gosport Road, or right back into Caversham. But that little stretch between the Fox and Hounds and Waitrose on of the Gosport Road is now one way going towards Caversham.
Right.
So it's talking from a personal point of view, if I'm driving into Caversham, it's fine. I just go along the Gosport Road all the way in. When I want to come home, I've now got to go up Prospect Street to the lights at the Prince of Wales and turn right and either come down Westfield Road or go along the Headney Road. The reason they've done it, I think, I did read a post from the councillor, Adele Barnett Ward, is that her surname? And there was, it's related to COVID and social distancing. Apparently that little stretch of Gosport Road, the footpaths are really narrow. So when we were in lockdown proper, and there weren't any cars on the road, if you were walking and somebody came the other way, you could pretty safely step into the road to give them a wide berth. But now things are getting towards some kind of normality or new normal. There's more cars. It's not safe to do that and you can't safely get past each other. So they've closed the one carriageway of the road for cyclists and pedestrians to walk along. I don't know if it's a temporary thing whilst COVID is in place and a problem, or if this is going to sort of go on for ages. But on the Facebook groups that I follow, it wasn't ever so popular the first few days, whether that's just people getting used to it, but there was a lot of pictures of traffic backing up along the Gosport Road, heading into Caversham. I guess I can see their point. It just seems quite a dramatic change for, I'm not sure what gain, really.
Well, I remember I did when I went to the Fox and Hounds, probably a couple of months ago now, walking along there. Obviously, that path is very thin. And you do have to walk in the road, and as you say, that was fine. So we can kind of see it from that perspective. And I think, obviously, ensuring that pedestrians are safe, that's important. Get people come, as we've discussed regarding transport and bridges and all sorts of things many times. That part of Greater Reading, I suppose, is chock full of traffic, and making it more difficult to get into Reading is not ideal, or even making it more difficult to get into Caversham isn't ideal.
No, and it's such a tiny piece of road that it benefits from a pedestrian and cyclist point of view. And also it'll affect things like, some of the bus routes. I think the one from Sonning Common actually comes down Prospect Street and then ordinarily would go left along the Gosbrook Road and into town that way, but it obviously can't do that anymore, so it'll have impact on things. And coming back from, I don't know, it just feels a bit bit dramatic for not a huge amount of gain. I get that they're sort of gearing everything, we talked last week or the week before about encouraging cycling and making it safer, and I get all of that, but I don't know, it just seems like a huge inconvenience for motorists for a tiny benefit.
Yeah. All right, Hugh, can you remember if it was temporary or not, just from when we were looking before?
Don't think so.
Okay.
Could be cool. Wrong. I don't know much. I really don't know much. I really don't know much about it, I'm afraid.
Fine.
I've done very little work on it, so I can't imagine it would be temporary. Or if it's temporary, it's temporary in the sense that local councils love, which will mean about 5 years.
All right, well, we move on to
it would have been better putting a good speed limit in there, like a really low speed limit, just to
5 mile an hour.
Less, the cars and the pedestrians have to travel at the same speed.
I'm very eager to talk about this next story, which is about Reading being named one of the world's best cities, despite it being a town. Now, Hugh, I know you wrote this. Can I just get a quick straw poll from everybody? Does anyone care whether Reading is a city or not? Put your hand up if you care. No, okay, right. So that's a unanimous...
I don't really care.
That's a unanimous, we don't care if Reading's a city or not. Are you bothered if
Reading... I think I prefer us being the biggest town. I think that feels better than being the smallest city.
Becky, as someone who runs a sort of a local independent, I want to say business. Is it a business or is it just a hobby?
Let's say it's a business. Hobby sounds a bit blasé. It does take a lot of work.
Does it make any difference to you whatsoever whether Reading is a town or a city as a local businesswoman?
No, I don't think so. I don't see how it would. I don't think we're going to attract people in from miles around either that would care whether or not was a city market or a town market.
So, Hugh, then, why does Reading keep getting bunched up with cities? Is it just because it's big?
It's quite
or near London. Okay,
that's the reason. It's not technically a city, but it has so many things that cities have that it keeps on getting put quite high up in these world rankings. Which include, so for example, in this ranking, it's alongside Montreal, San Francisco, and Houston, which I haven't crunched the numbers, but I'm pretty sure are much bigger than Reading. but it has the same sort of levels of things like connectivity, and there's a lot of business buzzwords in this. Economic potential, human capital and lifestyle, cost effectiveness, connectivity and business friendliness, as well as keen interest for foreign investors as well. So while it's not technically a city, it punches above its weight with the big boys around the world. It often gets into these charts. It was named one of Europe's biggest, most fast-growing cities or something a few months ago, along with Newbury and Slough as well.
Right.
Which, what do we know about those two places?
Nothing.
They are also not cities.
Oh, sorry. Right.
Yeah.
So it's to do with whatever the measure is. Reading features quite highly in whatever the measure of these. Do you just out of interest? Do you think that, like, in Montreal, which I think we could all sit here and go, oh, that sounds nice, or Houston, which we think sounds sort of quite, but all these other cities, do you think there are people on the Facebook pages of the Montreal Advertiser at the bottom of it going, who would want to move to Montreal, soulless hole with overpriced flats? And do you think people are doing that in those places that live there?
I don't know. I think everyone, it's a trait of everyone who lives anywhere to moan about it, but...
people like in New Orleans and are doing that, or other exotic such places?
Even I don't know. I think places, people in there seems to be a real negativity about a lot of things going on in Reading, or shall we say. I'd just like to point out, for legal reasons, that wasn't us saying that. That was really a comment from someone else.
I was going to say, was that a quote, Tom?
It doesn't.
No.
Or is that your thoughts?
That comment does not represent the views of anyone on this podcast.
It was a comment I read off the Facebook page of Stir from a screen grab at the bottom of one of a Berkshire Life story from an individual. It is absolutely not my opinion or comment. And I will make that clear to Mr. Pierce later on that I certainly don't think that. Although he did make me buy him a coffee to get on the to get him on the podcast. So, you know, I'm not saying anything about that. Okay, well, in that case then, that is it for part one. In part two, we will be chatting with Councillor Pierce. We're chatting all about education and stuff.
The Big Interview.
Hi, everybody. I am on a video call with Councillor Ashley Pierce. Hello, Ashley.
Hello.
How are you?
Very well. How are you?
Not so bad at all. Not so bad at all. Now, I've got you on because you are the lead councillor for education in Reading. And obviously, you know, there's the small matter of kids going back to school in a coronavirus pandemic. And I thought it'd be wise to talk to the man. Would you say you're in charge of the kids going back to school, or is it a responsibility? What's the process for you?
I think each individual school is in charge of their own sort of area. And I think that's wise, and that's the best then, people nearest to the parents, the kids, the teachers. They know their communities best. I suppose I've just got a responsibility to ask questions and ensure everything's running smoothly.
What have you been doing?
lots of it.
Sorry, I did have an end to that question, but I started coughing in between. Carry on.
Lots of discussions and lots of meetings and lots of questions, really, with different organisations, including the schools, including the council. We've had lots of transport discussions. Public Health England, or whatever they're now called, also involved. Brighter Futures for Children, who work with our children's services. So lots of discussions, meetings, emails about the processes of what's in place when more kids go back next week.
Sorry about that. I started coughing right in between, right as I was asking your question, if it seemed quite blunt to any of our listeners. I'm not sure whether I'll be able to edit that out or not, so I'll put this in just to cover that point. Obviously, going back to school, you know, it's sort of similar to kind of trying to get people to go back to work, I suppose. And I've seen lots of ingenious ways of keeping kids apart. And I suppose we're being told that children have a reduced risk of infection and all of that sort of thing. Are there any specific things that you've had to kind of put in place? What's the advice at the moment for getting kids back to school? Just I suppose for parents really that are listening.
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of aspects to it, really. There's getting to school, which is a big element. We're obviously encouraging if parents and children can, that they walk and cycle more to school. We've been working very closely. That's one of the organisations with Reading Buses, that we've been able to get specific routes. So buses that might have been open to the whole public on some routes and at that time of day, obviously only in the morning, will be sort of student-specific buses, which obviously limits the interaction that pupils and kids will have with the wider public. We're looking into it. It won't be ready for next week, but hopefully sometime in the future. We've had a few signs of interest in our school streets, which if a school is eligible for it and it works well in particular areas, we'd close the road off at pick-up and drop-off times, so that encourages the walking and cycling. And we're hoping also on the transport to have a website portal go live. I think it's the end of this week, beginning of next week, where parents can sort of put in their address and school, and it'll give them the best walking route or the best bus route to try and make things as easy as possible. So from the transport side, getting them to school, there's lots of measures there. And then at school, it's really going to be all of our schools have undertaken their risk assessments and the safety checks, which have been done in conjunction with the teaching unions. And then each individual school will be slightly different. Lots of schools that I'm aware of obviously already have things like one-way systems, but that will be, I think, more enforced and more common at pretty much every school, obviously. So then you're again limiting that interaction kids have with everyone. Staggered start and end times are going to be pretty common, I think. So it might be by a few minutes, it might be, I don't know, by half an hour. So again, we're just limiting that contact with different groups of people. A big talk of bubbles and things in the news in recent months, and really all that means is you if at primary school you stay with your class, so you'll be in the same classroom or you'll go to lunch at the same time in that. Secondary school it's slightly trickier, but different schools are doing different things with, again, just limiting the amount of pupils you see, so they might have timetabling be slightly different. So at the school I work at, we're going to three lessons a day, longer lessons a day, rather than the five that we had. So you limit the interaction, and then there'll just be lots of, you know, the advice that has been given all throughout. Schools obviously bought lots of hand sanitizer. There's lots more washing stations, and they'll be encouraged to wash their hands and things like that. And you know, it's going to be a lot's going to be different, but I think a lot's going to be the same as well when pupils do go back.
I think just talking through the processes and what schools are going to go through, I was thinking, like, as an adult who goes to the pub and you know, I've been out a few times to have a drink or two, and I have a choice as an adult, as a paying customer, whether I in this current environment, as to whether I think this pub is safe to go to, whether they're adhering to the rules, and whether the people in there, I can make a decision over the people in there, whether they look like they are sticking to the rules. Sort of putting that onto a school, and I don't mean necessarily going for a drink, but putting that sort of situation onto a school, I would suspect there are probably a huge number of adults out there, parents out there, and probably some children, some young children as well, who might be quite worried about going back. And I suppose going into a situation, is there anything in place for children that are concerned about going back to school, and also children going back to school and maybe they don't feel safe, maybe they think that their school isn't dealing, because every school will, I am sure, will be doing their absolute utmost, but there will be one or two who get things wrong. That's bound to happen in the law of averages, I'm sure. So what's in place for those kids that might be nervous, but also kids and parents who sort of are going to school and think maybe actually this school isn't doing enough?
Yeah, on the students, some students are bound, you know, it's inevitable that some students are apprehensive and nervous. It's been a long time for some students, obviously that's, you know, 6 months not sort of being in a classroom. We had a summer transition program for some of those students that were going from year six into secondary school, about nearly 100, I think, where there was a bit of extra support. There's a website from Brighter Futures for Children called Kooth, K-O-O-T-H, where students can log on if there are, you know, nerves and anxiety, where there's guidance, advice, they can speak to someone on the phone or WhatsApp and organize a meeting. And then in terms of, you know, if our schools have worked, as you said, you know, incredibly hard throughout lockdown and then through the summer to make sure that the necessary measures are in place. So I've got every faith that our schools are ready and students will be safe. As you said, if there is some, you know, extreme circumstance where students or parents don't feel safe, the first port of call obviously should be to speak to the school. Lots of it will probably just be a sort of probable misunderstanding. And if they're still not happy, obviously they can contact me directly, but, you know, speak to the council, your local councillors, and obviously then we can intervene and have a word with the school. But I'm sure that won't be the case.
Yeah, that's good to know, I guess, because I assume sort of all it takes is for that, maybe that one key person who knows most of the situation to be off sick for a day at a school, and, you know, and perhaps someone less experienced. But, you know, all being well, we'll move on. So you're feeling quite confident about the situation going forward in Reading Borough?
Yeah, I think I'll keep going back to our leaders have worked incredibly hard, and all the school staff. And, you know, it's when you see other politicians talk about schools reopening, always at a point to make, they never closed. And pretty much every one of our schools remained open. It was, you know, a which actually in lead up to this was actually probably quite beneficial, because obviously all the measures that have been put in that I discussed earlier, that would have been very difficult to do if a school was full. But actually when schools were open from April onwards to sort of key workers and those vulnerable children, it allowed schools to try and put things in place. So actually it's had a relatively long lead, and obviously guidance and things have changed, and there's always going to be a bit of a rush when we're welcoming back hundreds more students next week. But there has been quite a long lead in to the process that'll happen next week.
Just moving it on from sort of COVID-19 and moving it on to sort of hopefully the future of Reading schools. We're seeing a lot of developments and a lot of developments spring up. In fact, on this podcast, we talked earlier about Reading Golf Course, where there's going to be several hundred houses built. And how are provisions for school places going on? Are we going to see a large number of new schools built, or are we going to, what's the council and what's your thinking in terms of school provision going forward?
Yeah, we've got a pupil place planning team at Brighter Futures for Children who are actually our education sort of feedback stats of how well, and basically every year and over a 3-5 year period, they predict based on things like census data and the local plan, like you said, with buildings and the demographics that are going through. And actually we come out very well in our predictions. We're in the last couple of years, they're very rarely off the percentage that we say. In the last few years, we've had obviously the Wren School and Maiden Early in Reading. They're now up to sort of GCSE level, so 5 or so years open. They opened because of the capacity needed there. As you mentioned, the golf course, we had the Heights Primary School in north of the river. That's awaiting its permanent new building. We've got the River Academy, which will be by Rivermead School, which will be a new secondary school online in 2 or 3 years' time. That will take six to eight classes of entry. Green Park in the south, primary school is opening in September, so they'll be opening their doors next week. Obviously, that was tied to the Green Park development down there, and as they move through. And then there is some, we obviously have the place planning meetings regularly, and there is some at primary, there's some spare capacity north of the river that some of those schools can fill up if the golf course and things like that go ahead. We're constantly looking at it, constantly looking ahead, and it's a tricky business of obviously picking, planning developments. If these planned developments are going to have kids, it might just be young adults without kids. If these things go ahead, if people move in and out of the area, but as I say, we've touch wood, in the past we've had a decent record of predicting, so hopefully that continues.
it just occurs to me, sort of lots of schools potentially opening at the same time or a similar period of time. How do you kind of go about getting enough staff and getting good enough quality teachers and other staff to fill these places? Because I can imagine, like, suddenly opening three new schools in a borough, or a sort of over a couple of boroughs, and suddenly you're needing, off the top of my head, I guess 100 new staff, something like that. How do you go about making sure that there's enough and quality?
Recruitment and in teaching is actually more retention is often the issue of keeping staff there. But we've got the fact that I think to sell that Reading is obviously a great place to live, as you know, Tom, but it's a dynamic place to live. There's lots of opportunity in Reading for, said, with those young schools. What you get often is quite vibrant new teams where promotion and things is prevalent and is possible, whereas maybe in some older institutions it might be sort of different in their ways. So things like the government announcing a couple of weeks ago about teachers' pay will go up 2.7% on average. Not everyone's going to get it, but especially at the lower end they will get it. That will help, hopefully. But we've been quite lucky in the last couple of years that it's a challenge, recruitment, as it is I'm sure in a lot of industries, but we've been quite lucky in the last few years that our teaching capacity is, we're always there, we're always just about full. So Reading must be doing something all right in getting teachers attracted here.
And just to kind of finish off, we'll go back to that sort of kind of COVID thing, which I guess is going to be around for a long time. I just wanted to ask you, as sort of a teacher yourself, over this period, we've not spoken about this before, but I imagine you've done it. You've changed a lot of practices. You've done a lot of probably hangout learning sessions like we're doing now. what sort of things would you take forward into a new school year? As if you were sort of starting from absolute scratch yourself and just going, right, I've done a load of stuff over the last 5 months with my classes, what things would you take forward into this sort of, I hate to use this phrase, but this new world or new normal?
It's funny to say, when the first lesson did via Microsoft Teams, I've been a teacher for 15 years, I felt nervous, which is very odd. Like, you know, it was like being a new teacher again. It was, yeah. You know, you're in school, I was in school, but obviously no kids in the classroom. I was sat at a laptop, and you know, sort of your heart was beating fast like that. 15 years back to that first lesson, and then obviously you just got used to it. And I think be adaptable is, I think, which is saying when you're in a classroom with teachers with kids in front of you anyway. Be adaptable. It's not quite the same. Obviously, you know, in a class, I can say, you know, said person, can you answer a question? If you try and do that on Microsoft Teams, their microphone might conveniently break if they don't want to answer a question. So you have to think new ways maybe of delivering the lesson. So, you know, on via Microsoft Teams, it's harder to be do an interactive lesson, and you know, you kid says something, teacher says something, so it might be delivered more in a sort of, you know, almost lecture style. But yeah, it is going to be about being adaptable for, you know, if this hopefully doesn't stay around, but if it does, gonna have to adapt a bit.
How are just thinking about those sort of Zoom and Hangout lessons and stuff and Teams, how do you deal with kind of discipline? Like, if they, because do you still have the kid messing around at the back of class?
Makes it harder for them, I think. At my school, it went very smoothly. So we're generally, I think other schools would have done this. If you know, if I was teaching and you were the pupil, there'd be me as the teacher talking, and I might put some slides and work up. And generally, there'd be another teacher or someone sort of administering the chat to ensure that there wasn't any sort of silly little stupidness. And I have to, and I'm sure this was the case in most schools, I have to praise the pupils that they, you know, that in general they wanted to learn, and there wasn't much of that, as there is in, you know, in most classrooms. So yeah, again, being vigilant, I think, to what they're doing.
Ashley, thank you ever so much for joining us. Was there anything else you wanted to add just before we go?
No, well, I will once again thank our schools and their leaders, which I'll never tire of saying, obviously for all of their work for the last 6 months. It's been, you know, quite a remarkable effort from our school leaders, so thanks again to them.
Councillor Pearce, thank you very much.
The Big Interview.
Okay, well, obviously schools are going back, and there's obviously a lot of work to be done, and a lot of work has already been done. Rach, I think you're the only one of us with a child currently. That's right, isn't it, Becky? I haven't checked on your child status for a...
Still child-free.
Okay, cool. Rach, what's Zachary up to? Is he going back to... Is it? I was going to say college for some reason for a second.
He's off to uni. he's
very
fine.
Very gifted child.
Yeah. He's very gifted.
What's he up to?
So he'll be starting in year one next week.
Yep.
And he is back, unless something dramatic happens in the next week. He'll be back all week, 5 days. Ooh. Woohoo!
Are there any precautions anything you're having to do?
No, I think from the school's point of view, they are, although the whole class is now back, they are effectively bubbling as a class, so
right.
They keep each class in their own classroom, they have their own outdoor play space. I think they eat their lunch in that area as well and stuff. And then from our point of view, not a huge amount. I think we have to limit the amount of stuff that he takes, because previously we used to look like pack horses with like his rucksack, his reading bag, PE kit, coat, everything. So now I think he just has to take one bag.
Yeah.
Just to minimise the amount of stuff that is there getting touched. And then the school, I mean, to be fair, he was there 2 days a week before the summer. The school were doing a great job of, you know, cleaning everything and putting equipment into quarantine for however long, 72 hours after it'd been used, before anyone. Yeah, so I don't even feel vaguely worried about it, to be honest, maybe is a bad thing. I think I'm just so relieved that, you know, we can stop the childcare juggling for a bit at least.
Well, that's good news. Well, good luck to Zach. We'll be thinking of him. It did occur to me that when you said they were bubbling, I wondered if perhaps he was staying over, like they all had hammocks or something in the classroom. I don't know, but
no, he's obviously an idea.
He's coming home, I presume.
Cool. He'll be coming home for his tea.
All right. Well, it is time for this week's random question.
The random question.
This week's random question. I have got the mug. Week's random question is, Becky, this I think is going to be right up your street. We'll see what Hugh comes up with. But the best gig you've seen in Reading. has anybody got anything off the top of their head, or do you need them?
Go on, Becky, because you must have a list.
I probably do have a list, but the best one, how would I pick? Obviously, Are You Listening is fantastic.
Yeah.
I think it was my first Are You Listening a couple of years ago. I saw a guy, a person called Ezra Furman. I first saw them at Are You Listening and have become like my favourite recording artist. And that was South Street, I think. That's my favourite gig in Reading.
Ezra who?
Ezra Furman.
Okay.
Like heartbreak bangers. Like every song is fantastic.
Heartbreak bangers? Yeah. Like Bonnie Tyler or... No,
not quite. I'll send you a link.
Yeah, educate me.
Hugh, have you got anything off the top of your head?
Me?
Yeah.
In my life, I've been to maybe 3 live music performances. One of which was in Reading. So
okay, so that, by default.
The only gig I've ever been to in Reading was Reading Festival on the Saturday in about 2002, I think. I saw Pulp. They were quite good. Wow. And I saw a band called The Strokes, who I quite like. And they were quite good. And I saw some other bands as well. But it rained all day. And I was just there for the day and was planning to go home, but then my friend said, "No, you've got to stay for the night, it'll be amazing." And I ended up trying to sleep while soaking wet in a freezing cold, massive scalp tent. And I think I left at about 2 o'clock in the morning and got a taxi home, and that was my festival experience. So the music was quite good, the rain was not quite good, and the tent experience definitely was not good, and I haven't been since. So.
Well, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, but that's still the best gig I've been to.
Rach, what about you?
A long time ago, when I was probably about 18, I think we've talked about this before, but they used to have really cool people play at Rivermead.
Mm.
Just in Scouting the sports hall. Oh yeah, we did go. Did we go to that?
Yes, we did.
That wasn't my choice.
Oh, okay.
that wasn't my one. But I saw the Manic Street Preachers there, which was pretty awesome. But I think that was probably just pit by the Prodigy in a school hall, which, to be honest, I was utterly terrified at because it was really crazy, but it was amazing.
That's amazing that you used to get bands like that to play at Rivermead. Mm. Now the most exciting thing you get at Rivermead is the local election count.
I think Robbie Williams played there as well.
Pretty exciting.
But it's a bit like Becky, you're like me, you're from Bracknell really, aren't you?
Yeah, don't tell everyone, Tom.
No, I'm sorry. I'll keep that under my hat. We moved to slightly better area. It's like when you look back in the history and you discover that in the 60s and 70s and probably early 80s, some absolutely incredible bands used to play at Bracknell Sports Centre.
Yeah, was it like, I can't remember off the top of my head, but it was like someone of the, you know, the Who's ilk, someone like that.
Yeah, oh, loads of them. There's over a couple of like sort of 10, 15 years, like all of the big bands of the 60s and 70s played at Bracknell Sports Centre. All of them.
Iron Maiden played there?
Yes.
In the early 80s when they were quite new.
Absolutely. So it was strange. They all used to play sort of these odd, out of the way places, and it was great. And we just don't get that anymore, do we? Really? So, which is very sad.
The big band at leisure centre thing doesn't seem to be a thing anymore, does it?
No.
Bring it back. Sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Although not ever so long ago, in the last couple of years, didn't Paul Weller play at River Mead? I'm sure he did because we couldn't get tickets.
I saw the specials, I think, there within the last couple of years as well. So they do still do stuff. It's just
I think Sub 89 had a bit of a monopoly on reasonable sized bands playing for a while as well, didn't it?
Yeah, my favourite Sub 89 one. I think this might be my favourite gig. I think even though I didn't go to it, I think this is the thing I enjoy writing about more than the gigs.
This is
when Public Enemy came to Sub 89 and then went for a curry in Reading afterwards. I think, and the owner of the curry, very savvy, then the curry house, a very savvy man, sent us all the photos in the morning afterwards of them and what they had to eat, which we've got somewhere on our website there, what they feasted on after performing in Reading.
Fantastic.
Flavor Flav and Co.
Nice. I saw Cast at Sub 89 a few years ago. That was good. Do you remember them from the 90s?
I do. Little Scouts. Little
Liverpool band. Yeah, that was good.
Right. Thanks, guys. We'd love to hear about your favourite gig in Reading. Here's Jeremy with how you can get in touch.
Get in touch with the team. Email hello@realreadingpodcast.co.uk. Find us on Twitter and Instagram @realreadingpod, and join our Facebook group by searching Real Reading Podcast.
Thanks, Jeremy. Becky, we've just got a bit of time to ask you about indie markets and that sort of thing. When are we likely to see one? When are we going to see you out and about again? And where can people go and browse your wares?
So a return to face-to-face market, we've not quite figured out yet.
Yeah.
It's proving a bit more difficult than I'd expected, but I did kind of fall into this market organising game, so learning as I go. But we are hosting an online one on the 26th of September.
Okay.
So we're just getting some virtual stall holders together for that now. There'll be some kind of familiar faces from our face-to-face markets, but hopefully some new people too, as we like to keep mixing it up.
Is it, Becky, is it part, it is Etsy, isn't it, that you're...
No, so I do both for my sin.
Oh,
so
okay.
The Etsy market is yearly, it's every kind of November, and is sponsored by Etsy.
Right.
I just organise it kind of on their behalf. The indie market is all me.
Oh, right, okay. I just wondered whether, with the Etsy side of things, I've seen in a few other towns, like pop-up shops where local Etsy sellers can have shelves and stuff.
Yeah,
is that something that they could do in Reading? Or
there is. Within Reading, I know... in Caversham, there's the Artisan Handmade shop.
I love that shop.
A lot of our Reading Etsy sellers do sell in there. And I think
that's closing at some point, though.
I think they're looking to branch out bigger. They're currently scoping, I want to say, the Oracle. I hope I don't get into trouble for saying that. I think they're just testing things out and seeing if they can get enough people.
Okay.
To have a shop in the Oracle, but... Etsy wise, so obviously I do it on the side. I've got a full-time job, I wish I could host a kind of in-person bricks and mortar shop, but at the moment that's not something I'm able to do.
Becky, where can people go to find out more about indie markets and things that you sell yourself?
So we're on Facebook and Instagram as Reading's Indie Market. And yeah, we'll be announcing all our stall holders and stuff for the 26th of September.
Lovely stuff. Thank you very much. Becky, thank you for joining us. Would you be up for coming back and guest presenting again in the future?
I would. It's been a lovely time.
Good. It's been lovely to see your face. It's a bit like getting the old gang back together.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I think, did all of us once go to Wokingham Fireworks?
Yes, we did.
I think we did, Rach. I distinctly remember you being there. I think even Hugh was there.
I think it was. Which was what happened there.
A rare house. It was those ones, wasn't it?
It was, yes. A rare error of judgment from Hugh there.
Yeah.
He went out.
I clearly caved into peer pressure.
Yes. Okay, that is quite enough for this week. We're still looking for good people to speak to, someone that would make a good interviewee on the show. If you have any suggestions, please do get in touch via Facebook or Twitter. If you have a moment, please do give us a rating on your podcast app, and if you have time, submit a review. We'll be back next week for more Reading podcast goodness. So in the meantime, everybody, bye.
You're listening to the Real Reading Podcast.
Write in if you know who the Loop Loop Man is.
Or woman.